So, today I want to talk about a subject that arose in differential geometry anyway in the context of studying minimal submanifolds. And in fact, in the calculus of variations in general, it's been around for quite a long time. Cara Theodori called it the royal road to the calculus of variations, a cheap way of proving that something actually satisfies the Euler-Lagrange equations, and in fact satisfies them in extremum. And that's this notion of calibrations. I'm going to define what it is and then say what it has to do with the special holonomy stuff that I talked about yesterday, and try and make contact with some of the things other people have been saying about particular cases, in particular today, SU 3 and 6 manifolds. So the the idea is to find very minimal submanifolds. You know, in differential geometry, we call submanifolds minimal if they're critical points for the area functional, not necessarily actually minimizers. But what we're going to construct here are actually minimizers. And the data are, as usual, a manifold of some dimension, big N, G, Riemannian metric. And a form phi of degree n on M that has the following two properties: that first of all, phi is closed, and second of all, its value on any oriented n-plane is less than or equal to the volume form of that n-plane for all E in the oriented Grassmannian of n planes in the tangent space. Such a phi is said to be a calibration. The idea is that it measures all n planes, all oriented n planes, and it measures no more than the volume of the n plane. And we say that a submanifold in little n in M oriented in N is a phi manifold or is calibrated by phi. I'll say both. If the tangent planes at all points actually satisfy equality here, that is, if phi on n is actually equal to the volume form on n. So, I mean, of course, this means at every point, so i.e. on each tangent space. And I might as well put a definition, this definition up, the Grassmannian of phi planes, the phi planes are going to be the oriented planes where you actually get equality. Now, the reason we care about this is the so-called the fundamental lemma of calibrations. Is that if any closed phi manifold in is homologically mass minimizing. In In other words, its volume, its n-dimensional volume is minimal in among all things in that homology class. And the proof is the standard one-line proof that says that the volume says that if, and I'll give this argument just because everybody ought to know it, and second because it's just about the only thing I'll actually prove today. If n tilde is homologous to n, then you get the following chain. The volume of n is, of course, the integral to the is equal to the integral of the volume form of n over n, which is equal to the integral of the calibrated of the form phi over n because of that equality, which because phi is closed, and n and n prime are homologous. This is the same as this integral. But now, because of the second inequality, that's less than or equal to star n prime 1 of n prime, which is the volume of n prime. Right. This star, by the way, I mean the Hodge star operator, right? It's the thing that, and when I put a little subscript, I mean on the relevant object. E is an oriented plane, it has a star operator. An oriented manifold has sitting in a Riemannian manifold has a star operator. So on. So you get this inequality, kind of trivial inequality. But there's one nice thing to notice about this proof is that it actually proves something stronger. It says that anything not only is a calibrated manifold homologically mass minimizing, but anything with that volume in the same homology class must also be calibrated by phi, and therefore be also a phi manifold. It's a corollary. If vol n prime equals vol n, then n prime is a phi manifold too. As well. In particular, this shows that the moduli space of nearby minimal submanifolds to n is filled out entirely by, in the same homology class, is filled out entirely by phi calibrated manifolds. That is, you don't have everything nearby satisfies the same very strong differential equation. And we'll see just how strong when we go and look at examples in a minute. And that makes it much more useful for applications. That makes the moduli space of phi calibrated things or phi manifolds generally is a much more manageable object. Firstly, because it's defined by first order equations rather than second order equations, and secondly, because you have better hope of getting computing dimensions and so forth, because when you linearize the equations, you get a first-order elliptic operator, which has a good chance of having a reasonable index. I mean, rather than just the trivial, self-adjoint elliptic operator that you get for the Jacobi equations, which will have zero index and tell you nothing. So, so that's why these things are often looked at as better than minimal submanifolds. Let me give some examples. And of course, I'll start with the granddaddy example of all of them. The first example is Verdinger. Verdinger's theorem. And here the data are M, G, and omega is a Kähler manifold. Kähler manifolds assuming that you've been following Dave's lectures and know what that is. So this is the two form. It's closed and of constant, covariantly constant with respect to G. And Verdinger's inequality states that for any less than or equal to, let's see, this is capital N over 2. Of course, that's even, K N over 2. If you look at phi K equals 1 over K factorial omega to the K, so that sits in omega 2K N, is a calibration. And G phi, G phi K is actually equal to simply the Grassmannian of complex subspaces, k-dimensional complex subspaces in the tangent space. I'll put a little real there to remind you that. In other words, this form calibrates, this sort of divided power of the Kähler form calibrates exactly the complex subspaces, which tells you, of course, by the fundamental lemma, that they're absolutely minimizing in their homology classes. That's one. And it also says that any perturbation as a minimal submanifold of a complex submanifold remains complex. So you can't distort it and keep it minimal and go outside complex. All right. So that's one example. Note, by the way, that you don't actually need, in this particular case, omega is actually parallel with respect to G, is Kähler. Is the Kähler condition. But you don't actually need that for this argument to work. All you need, well, you need omega to be closed, but you don't need the complex structure to be integrable. In fact, the integrability of the complex structure is almost irrelevant to more generally can take M in G omega to be almost Kähler, as they say, which is simply, i.e., omega is closed, and G is compatible with omega. Omega, in the sense that the i.e. the J defined by G of X is omega XJX satisfies is skew symmetric. And satisfies J squared is minus 1. I guess it's automatically skew symmetric. I don't know why I wrote that down. I mean, omega is skew symmetric, so obviously it's skew symmetric. I want J squared to be minus 1. That's the condition. and of course, the set of such things. The condition that d omega be 0. And will necessarily be non-degenerate because of this condition. That, of course, makes M a symplectic manifold. So M omega is symplectic. And G is a section. Is any section of the associated SP N over 2 R mod U N over 2 bundle of compatible metrics. So, and of course, that's quite a large class, and And we all know by now, differential geometry was more or less turned upside down by Gromov's observation that you could still do quite a lot of complex geometry with throwing away everything but this compatibility condition. So he started looking at the calibrated curve, the calibrated surfaces in such guys, which are complex with respect to this J, which need not be integrable. And he introduced lots of invariants that just revolutionized the study of symplectic geometry by just throwing away this too much compatibility condition. I mean, this not unneeded compatibility condition. However, there's one thing I should point out in this context is that although there are still plenty of phi 1 calibrated surfaces, there'll always be. Many V1 calibrated surfaces, i.e. pseudo-holomorphic curves, locally, and then the global picture is, of course, what makes everything interesting. But in general, there won't be any other calibrated things for K strictly less than n over 2 and bigger than 1. But generically, no phi k manifolds for 1 less than k less than n over 2. The simplest example is to look at, and well, of course, the first time there is anything to look at is dimension 6. And if, for example, you take the 6th sphere, with its standard almost complex structure. It doesn't have a closed form, but that's an example of an almost complex manifold for which there are no four-dimensional complex submanifolds, almost complex submanifolds, and one can give examples with omega closed, but that's a little harder. So that's one example. Another example that comes up quite a bit is in the hyperkähler case. And the hyperkähler case, this is i.e. M G has holonomy SP. This is capital N, SP N over 4. What this means is that, has holonomy contained in, right, SP N over 4, sitting in SO N. what this means, remember, SP. The SP subgroups are the subgroups that commute with an orthogonal quaternion multiplication on the tangent spaces. So if the holonomy sits inside SP n over 4, there'll be parallel complex structures, ij and k, all skew commuting. So i.e., there exists ij, k, skew commuting, and g parallel. And corresponding one forms, omega I, for example, of x and y, omega I of x and y is g of I x y, and so on. You get these three forms, and because the ij and k are parallel, the omega I are parallel, you get d omega I equals d omega j equals d omega k is 0. So any one of them could be a calibration, and powers of them give calibrations, and they all calibrate their respective submanifolds that are that are complex with respect to I, or submanifolds complex with respect to J, or complex with respect to K. And because of Verdinger's inequality, what that means is that we can detect the submanifolds that are simultaneously complex with respect to all these different structures, the so-called triholomorphic submanifolds, simply by writing down the right calibration. So if we set bk equal to 1/3 1 over 2k factorial omega I to the 2k plus omega j to the 2k plus omega k to the 2k. So, of course, that sits inside 4k m. That's a closed form because the omegas are closed. In fact, it's parallel. And phi k calibrates exactly the quaternionic k planes in the tangent space, in the tangent bundle, sitting inside the 4k. Which says, again, that any, from this, of course, you see that any deformation of a triholomorphic submanifold as a minimal submanifold stays triholomorphic. However, now, I'll just make a remark. While this is potentially interesting, for the generic hyperkähler manifold, there aren't any of these things. For the generic hyperkähler there won't be any. There do not exist dk manifolds for 1 less than or equal to k less than n over 4. And the reason is it's very, very overdetermined for a submanifold to have its tangent planes everywhere be quaternion linear. In fact, it's so overdetermined that that most of the time there won't be any solutions. In fact, it's not hard to see that the only solutions are totally geodesic. That is, if there is a triholomorphic submanifold, it's totally geodesic with respect to the metric. So in fact, there's at most one through every point in any direction, and the only time you actually get that is when it's one of these. In this case, the only time you actually get that is when it's flat. So there's a generalization of this to the quaternion Kähler case, where you don't actually have a parallel I, J, and K, but you just have a parallel algebra of multiplications. And in that case, you can get there are constant sectional curvature things, the quaternionic projective spaces, and they're non-compact duals that also have submanifolds, quaternion submanifolds in every direction, but that's the only case. Seem not to have very much white chalk. Did I? Should have looked more close. Ah, here's a piece. Is there a question?
No, a suggestion about where to look.
Oh, okay. Oh, thanks. I found one piece, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to need more soon. Right. Yeah. An example that is of great interest, I think, in this particular case is the so-called special Lagrangian case. Thank you. I.e., M, in this case, I'll go ahead and write 2 little n, G, has holonomy sitting in S, U, N,
sitting in SO2 here.
And in this case, there's a parallel, not only is there a parallel Taylor form, omega Taylor form parallel, G parallel, but there's also a holomorphic volume form, G parallel. And in terms of a unitary coframe, if say omega 1 up to omega n is a unitary coframe, is a special unitary coframe, omega looks like I over 2, you know, the usual thing. So that's just algebraically what it looks like at every point. And it's not hard to prove, can be shown, that real omega, I'll call this phi, real omega is a calibration. In fact, the slightly stronger statement is that for any plane, any oriented plane, n plane, E, phi, omega restricted to E is actually equal to C of E plus I S of E, times the volume form, where C of E squared plus S of E squared is always less than or equal to 1, with the quality, if and only if, omega restricted to E is 0. In other words, this particular calibration has the property that that everything that it calibrates, in particular, anything that it calibrates would have to have S is 0 and C is 1. Anything that it calibrates is actually Lagrangian, right? And conversely, if you have a Lagrangian submanifold, so if N is Lagrangian. I.e. omega n is 0, then omega restricted to n is actually e to some phase, some theta, some function on n times the volume form of n. And it's clear that if theta is constant, then we can take the real part of e to the minus I theta omega, and that will be a calibration for n. So theta equals constant implies that it's minimal. In fact, absolutely minimizing. And in fact, it's not too hard to prove that if it's minimal, that if it satisfies, you know, mean curvature equals 0, then theta must be constant. So in fact, the only even minimal things have theta as constant. Theta is constant. So n is minimal if and only if theta is constant. Take n to be connected, so that I don't have to worry. It's locally constant is what you need. M is minimal if and only if theta is locally constant, which is if and only if real part of e to the minus I theta omega is a calibrates N. Now, the Lagrangian subspaces are large. I mean, there's lots and lots of Lagrangian submanifolds. You guys are all physicists, so you know all there is to know about Lagrangian mechanics. So you know that the general Lagrangian submanifold is basically the graph of the gradient of an arbitrary smooth function in Darboux coordinates. And then this equation, that e to the I theta be constant, it becomes a single second order equation for that graphing function. So to be special Lagrangian, that is, have constant phase and be Lagrangian, is locally a single second order, in fact, a pretty obviously elliptic equation, although that has to be checked, but it's true, elliptic equation for the Lagrangian potential. So when written in terms of Lagrangian potentials, this is an equation. This is a single second order elliptic equation. Elliptic PDE for the potential. So it's determined. So locally there'll be lots of solutions. And this fact, this sort of fact that you can do this integration is is what makes the study of the moduli space of these things particularly reasonable. right. Oh, I should say what the Grassmannian is. The Grassmannian of phi in this case is, well, it's not too hard to imagine what it is. In fact, the SUN acts transitively on these special Lagrangian planes. The Grassmannian of phi is actually SUN modulo the stabilizer, which is simply the real rotations that fix a real plane. And you notice that this is a single fiber inside the full Lagrangian Lagrangian Grassmannian. Which would have an extra circle factor corresponding to this e to the I theta. So has dimension, and you'll see why I care about this in a minute. Minus n choose 2. it's actually a fairly small dimension as Grassmannians go. So it's a little bit of a surprise that there are so many special Lagrangian submanifolds. I'd like to point out that just as in the Gromov's generalization of the special Lagrangian of Taylor geometry to study some plectic manifolds, there is in dimension 3, when n is 3, there's a particularly attractive generalization of the special Lagrangian case. And I'd like to mention that because it's the fact that it doesn't work in any other dimension makes it automatically interesting, as far as I'm concerned. So. There is a weakening of the Calabi-Yau case. there's a weakening that still has good properties. And the good properties, the idea is this. So you start with an M6 with an SU3 structure reduction. Of the tangent bundle. And this always exists as long as M is orientable and spinable. So as long as the first Steeple Whitney class and the second Steeple Whitney class vanish. And, of course, what are the forms that are invariant under SU3 in dimension 6? There's exactly these two forms, basically, in the algebra generated by them. So then M has a well-defined omega and big omega, which can be split into a real part and an imaginary part. Omega is, of course, real. right. And one can look, you can look at, and because of the underlying metric, the underlying metric associated to omega, in that metric, phi has co-mass 1. That is, it evaluates on every oriented n plane to be less than or equal to 1, because just algebraically it's the same as this. There's nothing to do, right? So we can look at the conditions needed for there to exist enough special Lagrangian three manifolds. And I'll make clear what I mean by enough in a few minutes. So yes?
We have to require
it. I just said special Lagrangian. I didn't say calibrated yet. I didn't call this a calibration, right? Well, the only calibrated planes are still planes on which omega vanishes, right? And if you and so we have an equation. D omega is not necessarily zero anymore, but by the primitive decomposition, you can write d omega in the form a one-form wedge omega, wedge little omega, plus a primitive form pi, where pi wedge omega is zero. Of course, that's some canonically defined three-form. And if you're going to have special Lagrangian three-manifolds, they'll have to annihilate omega. They'll have to annihilate psi, again, because of this condition, and they'll also have to annihilate pi. Right? So any special Lagrangian N3 sitting in M is an integral manifold of, that is, sorry. I just came from teaching a course in exterior differential systems at Berkeley, so I may slip into that language from time to time. Satisfies omega on n is psi on n is, and therefore pi on n is zero. And now, in general, this will be two different equations for this potential function that we would have here, right? And an overdetermined second-order a pair of second-order elliptic equations for one arbitrary function, the generic such pair has no local solutions. So if you just take a generic SU3 structure like this and write it down, there won't be any special Lagrangian submanifolds. That's not I haven't proved that, but it's true. You can easily write down examples. Well, not easily, but you can write down examples where there are no special Lagrangian submanifolds. However, one thing that will at least get us back into the algebra picture reasonably will be to reduce the equation, so to speak, the quote-unquote second-order equation to, instead of two equations, make it be one, by simply requiring that pi be a multiple of psi. Right? So the weaker integrability condition is that d omega should be lambda wedge omega plus some multiple of psi. for lambda one form and f function. That's one, and as Dan points out, this at least removes the overdeterminedness, or apparently removes the overdeterminedness condition. The problem is that if omega is not closed, we cannot, there is no Lagrangian potential. You can't write down the Lagrangian submanifolds in terms of a potential in any reasonable way. So that seems to present a problem, but in fact, this overdetermined system is what's technically known in the literature as involutive. In the analytic category, it has as many solutions as local solutions as the Lagrangian case. In the smooth case, I don't know. It's an interesting question whether these things actually exist. But at least in the analytic category, that the wealth of special Lagrangian manifolds persists here. The wealth of special Lagrangian submanifolds persists. And as Dan pointed out, if we want these things to be minimal, if we want the calibration argument to apply, we need to also impose phi is closed. So we just do that. So this is my proposed generalization of special Lagrangian geometry in dimension 3. No, that's right. These equations. Now, this is a system of equations for the SU3 structure, and it's reasonable to ask, well, does that just force, I mean, is that going to ultimately force lambda and f to be zero, and therefore get us back to what we had already? And the answer is no. There's lots more of these than there are SU3 structures. I think it would be very interesting to develop something along the lines of Gromov-Witten theory for special Lagrangian submanifolds where you've loosened the integrability condition like this. And I'll say more about that when I come to what we know about these special Lagrangian submanifolds.
If you can find solutions to that equation, then you can relatively easy find special Lagrangian of them by plotting
them. Relatively easily, yes, in the sense that there's an abstract existence theorem that says that there exist lots of them locally. It's the Cartan-Kähler theorem, which in fact says that, in fact, the Cartan-Kähler theorem would say this, if you have a real analytic solution to these equations, and you take any surface in your six manifold on which omega it vanishes, so any sub-Lagrangian surface, then that can be thickened uniquely to a special Lagrangian submanifold in a neighborhood. Yes? Any real analytic, sorry.
Yeah. And that SU3 structure is given by a non-zero spinner field.
That's right. Once you fix a metric, right. Well, see, you won't have spinners unless you have a metric.
I mean, I thought maybe you could re-express those equations in terms of an equation on non-zero spinner.
You can reformulate it in terms of the spinner field of the underlying metric, but actually that turns out not to be the way to understand the solutions. There's a much cleaner way to do it without having to go to spin. But to prove that there exist SU3 structures on any orientable spinable manifold, I mean that's what you do, right? You put a spin bundle up which has fiber C4 because spin six is SU4, and there always is a non-zero section, and so just take that section, and that reduces the structure group to SU3, which does exactly what you need. So that's why they exist. But when you write down the differential equation, it's better to avoid fixing the metric as long as possible, it turns out. Turns out the easy thing to do is solve this equation first. And then, because it turns out that this equation is the condition that phi is algebraically right, that it looks like the real part of a holomorphic three-form, that's an open condition on a three-form in six variables. And so it's an open condition. It's easy to find closed solutions of this, and then start with a closed solution of this and promote that to a metric by finding a section of a bundle satisfying a certain differential equation. That turns out to be the best way to do it. But you'll notice that this kind of thing basically doesn't get you anywhere in any other dimension. In dimension 4, when n is 2, you're not looking. I mean, the three forms don't matter anyway. But when n is 2, the three forms don't matter anyway. And when n is bigger than three, you can't. I mean, these two things will be at different dimensions, and they're just not gonna, and they just won't line up. I mean, it won't even help that to assume that psi is just some multiple of pi, because it turns out psi has no multiples. Psi is not a multiple of anything. So you sort of lose everything. But dimension n equals 3 is very tight, and it just happens to work. Plus, these overdetermined equations happen to work out very nicely in dimension 3. So if I have time tomorrow, I'll say something about that. Say more about this. But, oh dear. Let's see. Where am I? Sorry, I haven't been looking at my notes that much. Oh, one more thing before I go on to talk about the geometry of these of special Lagrangians and higher. I had two more examples to give. This special Lagrangian case works in all dimensions. There are two more fairly rich calibrations that work in special dimensions 7 and 8. Which correspond exactly to those two special dimensions in reduced holonomy that I wrote down yesterday, G2 and spin 7. So when n equals 7, if you start with a G2 holonomy manifold, when n equals 7, let M7G have holonomy sitting in G2, which sits in SO7. It turns out that there are two invariant forms. G2 preserves two forms in dimension 7. And so we'll have two parallel forms, one of degree 3 and one of degree 4. And so there will be two parallel forms. G parallel forms. I'll call them phi and star phi. Star G sub phi. And of course they'll be closed and co-closed. So they're both closed. And it's not hard to see what the calibrated cycles are. I mean, what the calibrated forms are. If you look at G phi at a point at some x, then it turns out that is actually equal to the orbit, the G2 orbit of a single calibrated plane for any e in E in the Grassmannian, E in G phi x, x in Tm. That is, all the, just as in the special Lagrangian case, they're all equivalent by G2 rotations. And the stabilizer of such a plane is SO4. So this is G2 mod SO4, which has dimension 8, and therefore the Grassmannian is codimension, the Grassmannian is codimension 4 in the full Grassmannian. So G V sitting in GR3TM has codimension 4. And this is a very good sign, because if you think about it, we'll be looking for three manifolds. And locally you can think of them as a graph, R3 over R4. And the condition that the tangent plane lie in some codimension 4 subset of the Grassmannian is therefore four first order equations for basically four unknowns, the four graphing functions. So it's a determined system of equations. And it shouldn't be too surprising that in fact it turns out that there are lots of solutions. In fact any surface, and any real analytic surface in the seven manifold can be thickened uniquely to a phi calibrated plane, in a phi calibrated submanifold. So locally there are lots and lots of phi calibrated three dimensional submanifolds. I'll say something about the relations between all these things a little later. And star phi, because of the principle of duality, any calibration, as long as its dual is also closed, is also a calibration. And star phi is in fact a calibration in this case. You get so G of star phi x at each point is also, it's just the perpendicular planes to the so-called associative planes here. So associative, and these are called the co-associative. And this is also G2 mod SO4. And again, now, however, the Grassmannian has, if you look at the dimension, let's see, four planes in. That's right, it has codimension 4 still. So G V sitting in GR4TM has codimension 4. But now that's not so good, because now looking at a co-associative submanifolds, R4 versus R3, we have only three graphing functions, basically. And they're going to have to satisfy four equations. And that's very much like for example, in the SU3 case, when you look at what's going on there, you have an extra equation. And so you have to worry a little bit about whether or not these things exist. But they do. Again, by the Cartan-Kähler theorem, it turns out that they are. There are plenty of these. Lots of these. By Cartan-Kähler. And the last example, I'll give more detail about these tomorrow, but I just wanted to sort of get them up on the board today. When n is 8, and you let m8g have holonomy sitting in spin 7. Spin 7, there is one invariant form. There's one spin 7 invariant form, parallel form. Which I'll call capital Phi, which is actually self-dual. So it's not. That's why you don't have two. And here again, the Grassmannian at any point, the calibrated planes turn out to be spin 7 mod a product of SP1s. And this has dimension 12, so it's codimension 4, and that's exactly what we'd need for it to be a determined system of equations. Exactly what we need for it. Yes? Sorry, SP what? Oh, phi is closed. It's parallel, and therefore closed. Right. It's parallel and therefore closed. So there are lots of local solutions, and in fact there are global solutions in some cases, although we know very little about the moduli space. And this is almost the list of interesting calibrations. There aren't a whole lot more things there aren't a whole lot more calibrations that have lots and lots of calibrated submanifolds. Part of the reason is precisely this kind of dimension counting. You see, when the codimension of the calibrated planes is sufficiently small, that means that the equation is close to being determined. It can't be underdetermined because it's got to an underdetermined system couldn't be elliptic in this sense. It could not imply the minimal surface equations. That's not hard to show. It's sort of a Clifford algebra argument. So the codimension of the Grassmannian has to be at least the codimension of the submanifold in the ambient space. And the only times you actually get a quality is really very few. There's this n equals 7 case, the n equals 8 case, and the surface case in the Kähler case. That's the only case where you actually do get a quality. The rest of the time, it's going to miss a little bit, like the special Lagrangian case. But we don't have a complete classification even in the just miss a little bit. We do have a classification in the completely tight when the codimension of the Grassmannian is exactly the codimension of the submanifold. You'll notice in this case that it's considerably larger in general here, growing quadratically even. And you'd want something fairly tight like this because that allows there to be lots of solutions and some chance of being able to construct compact examples. When things are too rigid, it's very hard to get them to close up. So I have 15 minutes. Let me make this remark, and then one thing I haven't said, although this turns out to be very useful in applications, is that things can be calibrated more than once and in more than one way. In which case, you get a much greater rigidity in the space of solutions, and I just want to point this out in two particular cases. So that is, you can have a given n can be both phi manifold and phi prime manifold. And let me give two examples. One, if you look in the Grassmannian of M planes in N space in CN, and here, to avoid projective space, I'm going to assume that M is at least 2 and is less than or equal to N minus 2, so that I don't have this. this is, of course, you can think of this as a homogeneous space, SUN mod S of UM cross UM minus N minus M. And there's, the standard, this Grassmannian of M planes has a canonical bundle over it, the subbundle. Where the fiber over any plane here, SE, SE is just E. The canonical subbundle. And as you know, there's the total Chern class, and for reasons of getting things positive, the total Chern class of this bundle is, this is an M-plane bundle, is 1 plus, I'll call it class of phi 1 plus class of phi M, where the phi I, call this M, phi I and omega 2 I M are invariant under SUN. Each of these cohomology classes has a unique representative that's invariant under SUN. And phi 1 is nothing but the Fibini-Studi metric. It's just the Fibini-Studi metric. That is, it's the standard metric on the Grassmannian, normalized so that the obvious P1s that sit in there have area 1. And you get inequalities, like, for example, phi 2, on any plane, not just any complex plane, but on any plane, phi 2 satisfies this inequality, for example. And that implies that not only is that implies that, for example, 1/2 phi 2 is a calibration, because by Verdinger's inequality, 1/2 phi 1 squared is a calibration, and this dominates this one, right? And since it's always greater than or equal to 0, that gets the inequality on the other side. We don't have to worry about that. 1/2 phi 2 and 1/2 phi 1 squared are calibrations. Now, they calibrate some four dimensional manifolds. They should calibrate some four dimensional manifolds. This just calibrates the complex submanifolds by Verdinger's theorem. But it's not so clear what this one calibrates. But what you can see, if you sort of graph in homology what's going on here, that you'll get, of course, integer values here. But because of this, because phi 2 is always less than or equal to, is greater than or equal to 0 and less than or equal to phi 1 squared, of course, you get that the only allowable homology classes, you get this kind of thing for, say, the complex submanifolds, right? And conclusions you get, for example, are that anything along here, well, what are these things? These things actually happen to be, well, this one, for example, well, this is the zero homology class, so there's not going to be anything there. This guy is exactly the set of of lines lying in a tree plane. So this is lines through the origin in a tree plane. That's a P2, right? Right. It's actually the lines in a fixed tree plane, and these, on the other hand, are these turn out to be the lines that pass through a point and pass through a fixed two plane, not on that line. And the rigidity theorem that you get, I mean, this kind of simultaneous calibration. See, anything on the boundary here is simultaneously calibrated by both phi 2 and phi 1 squared. Anything on the boundary here is simultaneously calibrated. And so you come up with a classification of the moduli space of algebraic cycles in these homology classes, for example. So, for example, this one, this has to be a union of the lines passing through a given point in surface of various different degrees. You know, fix a point, fix a surface of degree D, 1. Fix another point, fix a surface of degree D2. And take the union of those guys, and the sum of the D's will give you that homology class. And that's the only thing that's there in that homology class because of this calibration argument. And similarly, the only things that live in these homology classes, the moduli space is, you know, it's very tight. There, you just take a disjoint union of three planes, well, not necessarily a disjoint, just a bunch of three planes scattered around in your projective n minus one space, and now you just look at the lines lying in one of those planes. That's the only thing that you get over here. In here, the classification of the algebraic cycles is much more difficult. In fact, it's not completely known. Things about smoothness and stuff like that. There's lots of questions about what those algebraic cycles can look like. But smoothness questions and so forth. But the point I want to make is that when you can calibrate by more than one thing, you get a lot more information about what the moduli space is than you would a priori. Let me give one more example of this kind of thing where you get extra calibration. Suppose your Calabi-Yau threefold. If Calabi-Yau threefold M can be written as the product of an elliptic curve and a K3 surface, E an elliptic curve. And S, a K3 surface. Then we know, of course, E has its standard flat metric. We can take, E has its omega 1 and its capital omega 1, a 1-1 form and a volume form, which this is actually, a DZ, a 1 form. And S has omega 2 and omega 2 like that. And you can write two different calibrations down for on here. The natural calibration that you would take would be real part of omega 1 wedge omega 2. And that will just calibrate the special Lagrangian submanifolds of this K3 surface. Right. On the other hand, you can also take this guy, which is the real part of omega 1, wedge the real part of omega 2. That's also a calibration. And the only thing calibrated by both of them simultaneously is are the things that are the product of a circle in E cross a calibrated surface in the K3 surface. And what that means in particular is that if you take a, if you look at the moduli space of things near such a product, the special Lagrangian things near such a product, and you deform it, it will stay a product. It can't become non-product because it has to be calibrated by this guy as well. So products stay products. Oh, I have half a minute left. So, yes? I'm sorry? Is it? I don't know. Does anybody know the answer to this? We don't know. I mean, we can try and translate it into what we understand and figure out whether we can answer this question or not. But the main reason something like this is useful is that it allows us to actually say more about the moduli space in particular cases, in special cases, than we could hope to otherwise. I'm out of time, so I guess I'll talk about deformations and the deformation theory and things like that. That's what I'll begin with tomorrow. But the basic point is that we have in some cases we have a reasonable control over what the moduli space must look like, and we know a lot about what kinds of singularities can develop, but largely we're in the dark. There's a lot we don't know. And if we can't appeal to special tricks like this, there's lots of wide open questions that we don't know what to do with. So, okay. But I'll save those for tomorrow. So, okay. Right. Thanks. Yes, Gary.
So if you take a sort of Riemannian manifold that just has a couple of minimal surfaces on it or something.
Mm-hmm. If it's not homologically minimizing, then it can't be calibrated by anything, right? So you know, take an equatorial great sphere, great sphere inside of SN, right? That obviously can't be calibrated because it's not homologically mass minimizing. There is a sort of an abstract functional analysis type argument that says that if it is homologically mass minimizing, then there is a generalized calibration that calibrates it. It's a sort of Federer type duality argument in geometric measure theory, but you don't know much about the regularity of that calibration. It could be quite wild. I mean, and you have to go to this larger class of currents and so forth. What is true, although it's by no means obvious, it's true that any smooth minimal submanifold can be locally calibrated. That's trivial for curves and for hypersurfaces, but it's not so trivial in the middle ranges. And the obvious thing you might try to do, which is sort of collapse along the exponential map and pull back the area form, that doesn't work. You have to be more clever than that, but you can construct thereby proving something that we know how to do by harder techniques, but I mean, proving in an elementary way that minimal things are locally minimizing, which is not true for all functionals. So it is true for the area functional. Right. Yes.
I
didn't use anything about I didn't use really anything about the positive definiteness of the metric, but you do have to worry about whether or not you can actually write down co-mass one forms, because they're because you know the Grassmannian. Generally, what will happen is, of course, you'll run into trouble when you go into a null plane, and that what happens is that you sort of get a ratio of, you know, the size of the plane and the divided by phi, and if phi doesn't vanish on the null planes, then it will go off to infinity, and you won't have an upper bound. But under the right conditions, you can get these null planes to be calibrated. I mean, you can get phi to vanish on the null planes, and then you can keep things from blowing up that way. But you do have to be a little careful. There's a kind of reverse inequality that you can do for time-like things, because remember, the inequality goes the other way for time-like things. That is, you know, small deformations tend to decrease rather than increase. So you have to take that into account. But there are modifications. Okay.